Welcome to Sacred Cheese of Life, episode 38, about a podcast called Scamanda. Scamanda. I'm not sure that title works, but it kind of works. So it's a departure for me. I don't usually talk about journalism. If it's journal, I think it's journalism. At least the creator's a journalist. She wanted to do a whole series about this woman who pretended she had cancer and faked it for years and years and got all sorts of money and got all sorts of stuff and attention and like special treatment, like got to go, you know, to certain games and be on the field and all this stuff and got to go backstage at concerts and meet people. Like she got treated really well and got special attention and got handed a lot of money for being sick and having cancer. She was a great big liar, obviously, but also it's a fascinating story, and I get why people are so interested in this, because she's a mystery at the middle of it. We never hear from her, really. There are a few clips where she's speaking at a church or something like that, and somebody had recorded it, so we get to hear that, but we never interview the person, particularly herself. And so it's such a fascinating character study from every direction except first person that it just is endlessly fascinating to me as something you might do in fiction. And I mean, we did talk about Justine L'Arbalestier's novel Liar, which this definitely made me think of. Why do you lie? Why does somebody lie like that? She doesn't have Munchausen's, right? Munchausen's, you're convinced you have an illness and you trick doctors into thinking that you have it. And you are sure you have this thing. It's a mental illness where you're sure you have this thing. What she had is malingering, and I'm no expert, and also allegedly. So if she's malingering, then she knows she's not sick and she's pretending to be sick for sympathy or financial gain. And those are the two reasons people usually do it. And so to me, that's fascinating. What kind of gaping black hole of need do you have in your personality that you aren't getting attention the way you need it? And so you don't know healthy ways of getting attention and apparently need a lot more attention than you're getting. And so come up with this way of lying to everybody in order to get the attention you need. And you could imagine, and I was not there, but I could imagine somebody just being, you know, say at a gathering or whatever, and all of a sudden going, yeah, I have cancer. And everyone's like, oh, no, and petting you and like caring for you and getting you stuff and all this. Like, I can imagine that going on and then being sort of bereft when it stops. So in terms of character, like if you write someone like this, you remember my students threw that book across the room. They got infuriated by Micah in Liar, because when someone lies to you like that, it's annoying. And stop it. Like, nobody likes being lied to like that. It's such a betrayal. And it's cruel. It's manipulative and it's cruel. And nobody wants to experience that. And knowing that this person isn't, again, doesn't have Munchausen's, they're not convinced they're sick. They are lying about being sick. And you can tell this because she went to great lengths, and they go through all this in the series, to manufacture evidence, to manufacture photo evidence, like getting fake oxygen tubing and getting fake meds and like going to the emergency room, presumably for nothing, and being in a hospital bed so that they had pictures to show of being in a hospital bed, right? Like, they knew. She knew she was not sick, and she kept lying that she was sick. It's just so messed up. I don't know what to do with it. And it bothered me a lot listening to it. I was awake all night one night because I had muscle spasms in my back from having lunch with a friend, like sitting at the table, I guess. And I'm fine, actually. But I had muscle spasms and I had eaten a bagel, which I was allergic to. And I was on this Benadryl and I was still awake all night. So I listened to this podcast all night long, and it was a very bad night because It was maddening. It was absolutely maddening. You're like, here's a person being mean to people. It is mean. It is mean to lie to people about illness and to fake it and to get their attention and thousands of dollars. She got at least, she was convicted of at least $100,000 of wire fraud, and she got much more money in the form of cash. So lying to people and stealing from them, it's wire fraud. Like, that's not alleged. That's demonstrated in court, convicted, guilty. So lying to people and stealing from them on purpose, like not asking, hey, can I have this for this thing that I'm doing? But no, lying about it and stealing from them. It's so wrong. It's so wrong to do that. And all of these people were so angry and upset. And all I kept thinking was, there's two stories going on here. There's the story of what this person did, and then there's the story the way they told it. And the way they told it in the first episode, you're not sure whether she's actually sick or not. And it's tricky. It's a little tricky. It's a little, again, manipulative. But they want you not to be sure at the beginning. And so at the beginning, you're asking the question, wait, is she sick? Is she sick? She's not sick. She may be mentally ill. I don't know about that. But I don't know what you call it when someone is such a liar and such a manipulative person. I don't know what that's called. I am not an expert. It's very upsetting to listen to, and it's completely gripping because at the beginning you have that one question, and this is how you write good literature too, how you write good fiction. You have to make your reader ask a question. At the beginning, they make us ask the question, is she actually sick? And then you go on and you find out she's not. And then you ask the question, why is she doing this? Why is she doing this? And that's never really answered, except, again, the emotional gaping black hole of need. Like, need, need, need. It's never fulfilled because the person doesn't know how to fill that need right. And this is a problem with a lot of people who act out in different ways. They need something. And that need is true, but they don't know how to fill it right. Like, if you get, I mean, here's my other expertise, class. If you have a student who's acting out in class, they need something. That's not true. They do need something, but they don't know how to get it. And so they get it in a bad way rather than a good way. So they do get attention, but it's not good attention. They only get bad attention. And I've known people like this who only knew how to get bad attention. That's not great. And they basically need to get retrained to get good attention. And it's the same as your dog. Your dog is going to chew stuff up. If you don't pay attention to them, they're going to get that attention somehow. They will start breaking stuff. If you don't give them good attention, they will get bad attention. And it's the same with everybody. So it seems like, you know, this person maybe just didn't know how to get good attention and found a way to manufacture good attention, like caring, generosity, sympathy. It seems like pity in a lot of ways, but pity is so negative. And she didn't really get the pity until it all came out how she had ripped everybody off by lying to them. Then you might start feeling sorry for this person in a negative way, like, oh man, you really are in a bad spot. And there was one extremely generous friend who said, they interviewed a lot of different people. And one of these friends said, well, if she's not sick, then there's something else seriously wrong. And I'm going to be there for her because of that. And I thought, wow, you're a really good person. Because a lot of the people just were like, I can't anymore. I'm so angry at her. I like that person for admitting there's something wrong, because there's clearly something wrong. And it's just like the kid who acts out in class. You know, there's something wrong, and that's not untrue. The reality is there's something very wrong with somebody who would do that. And we need to solve that rather than just be like, you're bad. You know, you have to go like, okay, you really need something. Let's try to figure out a way to get you that in a good way rather than a bad way. Yeah, people who don't know how to get good attention and only get bad attention still need attention. They just have to figure out ways to get it in a good way. Like, send her on a lecture circuit where she admits what she's done and talks about it and, you know, gets therapy first and figures out how to talk about, you know, lying to people. Because people would go see her talk. I would go see her talk. I would be very curious. Why did you do what you did? It's also penance, sort of, right? Because she's guilty. She did a bad thing, and it would be a way to exploit it on her own and get attention and pay back all the people she stole from. Oh, that's so awful to steal from people that way. Like, it's bad enough if you just emotionally manipulate people and get them to feel sorry for you when it's not true. And I think I mentioned, did I mention that? I don't know. There's one day I was driving rideshare, right? And I picked up this kid who was like in his 20s or something. And he was off. There was something off about him. That happens a lot. There's a lot of people out there who aren't quite wired the way you wish they'd be wired. And he was telling me these sad stories, and I was like, oh, wow. And then it was too many, do you know? And so I started, like, not caring anymore because I was like, okay, that's a lot. And there's only so many times you can say, oh, that's terrible, without sounding like an idiot. And so I just kind of, like, stopped paying attention and focused on driving and tried to change the subject and all. And then all of a sudden he went, my parents died in 9/11. And I was like, okay. Like, oh yeah, you know, like, that's all I said, oh yeah, because it was a lie. It was clearly a lie, and he was desperate to get that attention back and didn't know how to do it right. Again, does not know how to get good attention, only knows how to do it in a bad way. Like, say something more interesting. There's plenty of things more interesting than this bad thing happened to me. Right? This bad thing happened to me is not that interesting. Bad things happen to everybody. Everybody's going through it. Anyway, the whole time I was listening to this entire long podcast all night long, whatever night that was, a couple nights ago, three nights ago, all I kept thinking was, this is a narrative. This is a story. This is somebody who's storytelling. She's a storyteller. She wrote this blog for years detailing all of this stuff. And all I could think was, you should be writing a book. Write a book instead. Write a book about this and admit it's fiction, and people would read it. It would be a great book, because she had this funny, like, perky kind of, and the actress who played her reading her blog posts made you hate her guts because she was so, like, fakey, cheery, and so trite, and so, what's the word? I mean, trite is the word. Like, every single thing she said, you've heard 10 million times before. And it was all, like, of the time and place, saying what everybody else would say. It was just fascinating. Like, if it was writing, it would be good writing, because you really captured that time and place and all of those cliches. Every cliche that everybody at that time used is in there. Like, she couldn't talk without talking in cliches. It's amazing. It would be terrible to be around somebody like that. And I don't think I could read that book, because I cannot stand cliche talking. But, you know, like, using every trite, trendy phrase, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me, and it makes my skin crawl. And then, whoops, I got to go somewhere else and do something else. So, like, if you feel the need to lie a lot, write fiction, because that's what fiction is. You get to lie. You get to get in the voice of somebody. You get to imagine what it's like. She clearly imagined what it was like to be super sick and to have all these treatments and everything. She also wasn't, and I say this as someone who doesn't know the person, obviously, wasn't very smart about it. At least wasn't very smart about it. I don't want to judge anybody's intelligence, but wasn't smart about it, because kept coming up with completely implausible things. Like, if you're on all this chemo for leukemia, you don't get pregnant. They tell you really, be really careful not to get pregnant. Like, you know, there's ways. But she got pregnant, not just once, but twice, and kept going, it's my miracle baby, and all these things. And, like, there were so many signs that it was a lie that it took complete suspension of disbelief by all these people. And I guess that's what trust does. When you trust somebody, you just let things go. You're like, oh, wow, two miracle babies, huh? Wow, and they're fine, huh? Okay. Instead of going, that can't be right. That can't be right. This can't be right. But also, we do tend to do sunk cost fallacy about friends and about believing things. Like, if you've already given money, you're not going to turn around and go, wait, I don't believe it anymore. You are much more likely to keep on doing what you first did, because if you don't, then you were an idiot before. And nobody wants to be an idiot before. So we keep going with what we were doing. Everybody knows this. So yeah, The friends who felt completely betrayed, I think, also probably felt kind of dumb for not putting together all those lies, those obvious lies. And everyone kept saying she looked way too healthy. She was gaining weight. She was, you know, healthy and had a lot of energy and kept going around doing all these things that people who are on chemo do not do, chemo and radiation and all this. They don't have that kind of energy. That's like one of the things. And so it was clear for those who wanted to see it that it was a lie. See, it's such a good story, and it would make a great story if it wasn't real. Because the fact that it's real just makes you angry. I was so angry. And she did get convicted and she did go to prison, although I think she's out now. She got out early. She got 60 months. And I heard it 16. I was like, 16? No, 60, 60 months. But that was, it's only been like, what, 24 or 30 or something like that. She got out very early. And every lawyer and the judge said, you have a high risk of recidivism, you're gonna do this again. And I could see her doing it again. She does, unless she learned how to get good attention. She doesn't know how to get good attention. I don't know. It's fascinating because going to doctors, and I have a whole issue around this with doctors not believing you, you know, doctors often don't believe certain people. And that's very upsetting when you actually need medical help. They tend not to believe what I say. And it has to be something with how I present myself, because I can go in there with my arm on sideways and they're like, yeah, yeah, sit over there. And I'm like, but arm. Like, I had to wait an hour with a clearly dislocated arm sobbing in the waiting room, such that other people were going up and saying, can you please help her? Because it was upsetting to be around. Anyway. Doctors don't tend to believe me for whatever reason. So as I was listening to this whole thing, I was like, how did she get doctors to believe her when she was lying? Like, you can't lie with blood work. You can't lie with x-rays. You can't lie with a CT scan. And I guess ultimately the point was she didn't. She did not get any doctors to believe her. She just faked it. She faked it all. Because at the beginning I thought, like, well, she has all these photos of herself in the hospital, and everyone believed her because of all that. But imagine going to all the trouble of faking that, faking hospital photos, faking medical records, faking anything, faking things to make people believe something you know is not true is just mind-boggling. And I get lied to all the time. If you teach college, you get lied to all the time. And I don't care, because I'm just like, yeah, you weren't here, so I don't know what to tell you. If you have a valid emergency, you can take the exam, but I have to write you a new exam and it's a giant pain in the neck. And I'm going to make you come in and take it at a stupid time because it's generally not true. But when they're really sick, it's clear when they're really sick or they really were in the hospital or whatever, but most of the time people are just lying and they didn't study and they're like, oh no, I don't want to take it now, I'll fail. And then they go talk to their roommate who also took the exam and get the answers. You know what I mean? Like, it's stupid and annoying and people do it all the time. But this is a different level of magnitude, order of magnitude. This is to do that deliberately to your friends and family, your neighbors, your people at church. It's not just your professor. They don't care about their professors. But to do it to everybody and steal from them is amazing to me. Like, there's plenty of people who lie. Like, I hear stories all the time about people who lie about, like, oh yeah, I'm a member of the British royal family or whatever. Like, okay, who cares? But they're not trying to get money out of you, so you don't really care. You just think they're kind of annoying and you avoid them. Lying is so stupid. I hate lying. I don't get why people do it. It does feel personal when people lie to you. It feels like you're just lying, that's fine. But if you're lying to me and you want me to believe something that's not true, I take that badly. I don't like it. I don't like being deliberately personally duped, you know? Like, I don't like someone deliberately personally attempting to dupe me. Don't lie to me. Lie about whatever. But if you're lying to me, that's different. So yeah, I definitely identified with the friends and family in this whole story. Okay, it was written and produced and put out in such a way that they included a huge amount of research, and they managed to find people from the past who she had told she had cancer years and years ago, who were just like, no, you don't. Like, this woman from the past who she had told she had cancer, then she told her she was pregnant, and the woman said, I thought you had cancer. Like, you're really not supposed to get pregnant if you have these cancer treatments going on. And she said to her, the pregnancy is reversing the cancer. What a ludicrous lie. What a ludicrous lie. And so that woman, like, just never spoke to her again. Never spoke to her again. Like, blocked her number, basically. And that's how I feel a lot more people should have acted when this, you know, healthy, plump, energetic person is bouncing around going, I have cancer. Like, no, you don't. Like, I guess it's hard to call someone a liar to their face. I guess. I don't know. Anyway, the way it was produced, by going into the past and finding times when she had done this before, they even went way back to college, maybe grad. Was she in grad school? I cannot imagine her in grad school. I can't even imagine her in college, to be honest. They found these people in the past who said, yeah, she was doing this as an undergrad. She was doing this as a grad student. She would just lie to get out of things. She would lie to get out of things she didn't want to do. She would lie to get out of work. She would lie to get out, and she would pretend to be sick to get out of whatever. And so I suppose it's one of those things where you do it and it gets rewarded. You do it again, it gets rewarded. You don't want to work. She obviously didn't want to work. She was extremely lazy and, what's the word, venial, like lazy and greedy. I want not to work. I want to lie in bed all day, and I want other people to take care of my responsibilities, and I want to get money for it. Okay. But like, making her teen or tween stepdaughter take care of these two little kids all evening, every evening, it's just so despicable what she did. And it's like, it gets into your head, this person in your, imagine if this person was in your life and all they did was try to get out of stuff, try to make everyone else do their work. Like, at their job, they do this. At their family, they do this. In their community, they do this. They want to be the center of attention. They don't want to do work, and they want to get money. Like, I don't know if you recover from that. I don't know if that's such a personality issue that it can ever be redeemed. And again, I'm thinking fictionally. If somebody did that in fiction, although I guess I did redeem this guy who really did some bad things, but still, like, I don't know if in fiction you could redeem that sort of person. Oh no, now I'm thinking of that horrible literary novel. Literary fiction. Ooh. This novel about a horrible user, slacker person, the one who stole the painting, accidentally, supposedly stole the painting, and couldn't think his way out of a wet paper bag to come up with a way to give it back, and so kept it for years and years and ruined everyone else's life around him, ruined the life of the guy who took him in. Like, just, it was a faker and a liar and a cheater and a drug addict and a thief, and just ripped off everybody all around him all the time. And at the end, you're supposed to believe he's redeeming himself. You get like a chapter at the very end where he's like, well, I'm going to start going around the world and going to all the people who I sold fake antiques to, and I'm going to make it right with them so that my friend who took me in doesn't get his entire career ruined. That's not going to work. And also, I don't believe it. I don't believe anybody really turns around that much. I don't believe you're going to redeem somebody who's so fundamentally lazy and dishonest in that book. And I feel the same way about this narrative. Like, I could not see this narrative going anywhere but down. In fiction, it couldn't go anywhere but down. And now that she's out, I wonder how long before she does it again, because, man. And there's, apparently there's a whole network, all the hospitals in Texas have an interconnected network now. And they really should have this everywhere. They do for like controlled substances, like certain medications. So somebody can't go to an emergency room and get a bunch of this and then go to another emergency room, get a bunch of that. You can't do that anymore. I think most places. And the emergency room I go to, they won't prescribe at all. They send you to your PCP and say they have to prescribe, which I think is very smart. But, like, she's not going to be able to do it there, you know? Like, they have her in the system as factitious disorder, which is malingering, which is making it up. And so she's, like, that needs to get treated, yes, but with, like, mental health, you know? Not with medicine. Needs to be at a doctor who is really good at figuring out why people lie about being sick and can help that person get healthy ways to get attention. Like, seriously, go be a preacher. She seems to like religion a lot. Go be a preacher. That's what I would prescribe. Go be a preacher and stop lying. You're not allowed to lie. Like, have somebody in your life who will say, hey, knock it off. And I don't think they've ever had that. I think they need that. They need an honest, like, sibling or somebody who can just be like, nope. Maybe that friend who stuck by her because of just vast generosity of spirit could be the one who says, hey, no, that's not true. I'm going to be in the congregation every week. And if you start saying stuff that's not true, I'm going to come up and take that microphone away from you because you cannot lie. Right? I'm writing this as a narrative. It's such a compelling story that I want to write it as a narrative. And that's sort of the third thing about it. Like, there were events that happened, and then there's the podcast, which I guess I do recommend, although really, like, maybe be driving across the country because you can't stop listening to it. And then there's the narrative beyond the narrative, which is this person as a character, which I cannot stop thinking about. And it's just so... it's because it ends in the middle. It ends with her getting out of prison. And that's like federal prison, interstate wire fraud. You can't do that. They get you for it. Like, don't steal people's money. Oh, it's so interesting to me that, like, there's so many other ways to make money. And everybody keeps saying it wasn't about the money for her, but it kind of was about the money. It was about, I mean, to me, it seems like it was about getting out of work. It was just about, I mean, malingering is a good word for it. It was just about not having to work. I want everyone to feel sorry for me and I don't want to work. Really? That sounds so boring and awful. And did I mention boring? Like, it's not fun to be home all the time. It's really not. I've been doing it and working at home. And even that, I'm working and it's still like, ugh, I got to go somewhere and do something. Look what happens when I do. I need to go more places and do more things. That's just a fact. But I don't want to spend the money because of not working enough. I really am being very careful that way. Okay, so that's Scamanda. I don't know how you deal with that. I don't. And of course, people like to sensationalize it and tell the story. Can you believe someone did this? But, like, you dig down and down and down, and it's just like, it's just kind of sad at the heart of it. Like, and I am with that friend. I'm like, somebody who would do something like that has something wrong. There's something wrong. Because if you're that lazy, why would you do all this extra work to come up with, like, to have fake hospital photos and fake? There's a point where she lied about getting an experimental medication in a clinical trial and doing it at home, which you can't, that's just not a thing. You cannot do that. It's in strict circumstances. It's in controlled situation. They're not going to send it home with you. Oh no. So yeah, you can't do that. But like, that's a lot of work. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of work to create this fiction. And the other level this really made me think about is that we all live certain fictions in our own lives. And you can't do a thing until you lie about doing the thing. Like, you can say, and I used this example earlier today, I'm going to make a quilt. Or you say, I'm making a quilt. And all you've done is go to Joanne, RIP, and buy a bunch of fabric. okay, you're not making a quilt yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's a fiction that you have to create in order for the real thing to happen. You have to believe, I'm going to make a quilt. Okay, well, step one, I go get fabric. Step two, I cut things out, maybe. Step three, I start pinning. Step four, I start sewing. Step five, I start pressing. All you do is press things when you sew. And eventually, yeah, you make a quilt, but you haven't made a quilt until the end. And so the whole thing is fiction. Do you know? Writing is the same way. Of course, I thought about writing. And I do meet a lot of people who say, I want to be a writer. And I'm like, well, just start writing and then you're a writer. But they don't feel like a writer because they feel like they're lying if they say I'm a writer when they haven't written anything yet. But you have to say it. Well, you have to do it in order to be it. So you have to write stuff. But they're like, well, like, I don't want to say it because then I'm a faker. And you're not. You're really not. You have to write the first draft in order to have the last draft. And you're a writer even when you're writing the first draft. But this goes with everything. You have to lie in order to make it true. Like, I can say, here's a lie. I used to be a musician. But if I say I'm a musician now, I think that's a lie because I don't really play my instruments. And I have a bunch of them. I can see four from where I'm sitting. and that's not even all of them by a long shot. So, but I don't play them. Are you a musician if you don't play them? Maybe. I don't know. That's sort of a semantic question. But like, I'm a writer for sure. I write and I write books and I finish books, which is important. And I finally got new glasses and I proofread Summerlands because I would do it. And I got this excruciating pain in my head and I was like, I can't. And so finally went out and got new glasses at Michael's. They're not expensive. They're just readers, but they're like a little bit stronger. And so I finished doing it yesterday. And now I have to put all those notes in, make all those changes, make sure the formatting's not screwed up and put it up again. Anyway, yes, am writer, can say, am writer. I think putting things out there is what makes you a writer. Like, everybody can write at home, but you gotta put them out there so other people can read them. You gotta stand behind what you did and feel confident in it and put it out there. That's important for everything. Like, honestly, I think if you're a painter and you don't ever let anybody see your paintings, why? And I understand why, but also why. You gotta do it. You gotta really do the thing. But there are things that you have to lie about in order to make them true. Like, I'm going to go to the Y and go swimming, which I meant to do today. Yeah, right. I intend to in a vague way. I intend to, like, 2 out of 10, like very low energy intention. Like, maybe I'll go do that. And even I know it's not going to happen. And then it snowed and I'm like, well, I'm definitely not going now because I have to shovel the snow because it's only like 2 inches. It's a little over 2 inches. It's not enough to snow blow. It's going to muscle spasms. I'm going to get muscle spasms from doing it. I hate it. What the hell is a muscle spasm doing? Like, your muscle's like, I'm a muscle. I'm going to freak out for no reason. Stop it. Stop doing that. It hurts so bad. And it's stupid. I don't understand muscle spasms. And I have medication I can take for it, but it makes me really crabby. Can you imagine? I was crabby, especially after I took it and I didn't sleep because it didn't work. And the Benadryl didn't work. And I was so crabby the next day. I was yelling at everything. It's not everything's fault. It's nobody's fault. I don't know how to solve it. It's probably the fault of final grades because I did a lot of mouse work on Monday all day long. And that's probably what set it off, really. Can't not do that. I should have 2 mice, one for my left hand. I could do that. Then maybe it would stop. I'll try it. I will try anything because it's really awful. Okay, so anyway, what do you have to lie about to make it true? Like, you can't, I don't know. On a certain level, I think you probably can lie yourself into having cancer. I don't know how the universe really works, but it does seem like if you pretend to be sick, you're going to get sick. Like, you can actually affect your body with what you think. And so I don't think you can cause cancer, but if that woman does not get cancer, I will be very surprised because I don't know, karma or something. Like, And I know I have fiction brain. Fiction brain tells you things happen in ways they don't actually happen. They happen that way in books. And like, it would make a good story, so you think that's going to happen. But, and I don't know. I read a lot of comments from people who were like, yeah, she's going to get cancer. Like, it's not funny. And I don't wish cancer on anybody, but like, if anybody should get it, that's who it should be, because of the lying and the stealing and the cheating and the just overwhelming amount of fakery that went on. Like, I just wonder, I really wonder about the state of mind of somebody like that. Like, they wake up in the morning and they don't do anything because they're sick, but they're not sick. But like, have they told themselves they're sick enough that they actually feel sick? And then they can't stop being sick, because then they'd have to go back to normal life and it would be like they were lying because they were lying. But like, I think you can get yourself really trapped in a lie like that. Like, you cannot stop doing it, because then, like, even all of her miraculous recoveries, because she would constantly go, I'm suddenly cancer free. And I'm trying to imitate that actress. You should really listen to it just to hear the actress reading the blog posts, because it's somehow the most annoying thing you ever heard. Like, it's perfectly done. Perfectly done. Whoever that actress is, A plus 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 plus. But like, did she wake up and go, I'm sick? Like, did she actually think it? I'm sick and I can't get anyone to listen to me in the medical world, so I have to show everyone that I'm actually sick by pretending. Like, did she actually ever believe it? I don't think so, because of the faking. I don't know, though. It's hard to say. I don't know what's in anybody else's mind. And I'm just thinking, again, fictionally, like, if you had a character who was pretending to be sick, they would know they weren't sick, right? You don't pretend if you think it's true. It's just really a strange thing. It makes me think of this time. I had these doctors. This was not my idea. I had trouble walking, and the doctors were like, you have MS. And I'm like, I don't think so, but okay. Here, go have an MRI. MRI says, no MS. I'm like, okay. So it's on my chart that I have MS, but I don't. And then they sent me to this neurologist who hated my guts on sight. And he said, I don't think you have MS. And I'm like, okay, the other neurologist said I did. So now I really don't know what's true. And then they sent me to, I moved and I went to another neurologist, and he wrote down that I was faking it, which is like, no. All I told them was I have trouble walking, because I had trouble walking. And it turned out I had an extreme vitamin D deficiency that nobody caught. But anyway, they did eventually catch that and said, ah, you have an extreme vitamin D deficiency. Here, take all this vitamin D. But anyway, that doctor who told me I was making it up has really stuck with me, because I was not making it up. Like, I did not want it to be happening, and I don't want it to be happening, and I don't want that to be part of my life. I'd rather never, ever, ever be sick, ever. I hate doctors. I don't like going to doctors. And it's partly because of that jackass who was like, yeah, you're clearly making it up. Hello, why? Why would anyone do that? What do you get out of it? And she got stuff out of it, but I don't think I would have gotten stuff out of it. And I was trying to prove it wasn't happening. No. Anyway, I just have a lot of issues around doctors and doctors not believing me. And having a doctor actually say I was making something up when a previous doctor had told me what it was, when I had no idea it could have even been that, was upsetting. It's upsetting to be told you're lying when you're not. And I even said, like, I'm not having an episode right now. You're not going to see it. And he's like, I want to just walk across the room. I want to see if you have it. And so I walked across the room. I was not having an episode. It's a whole thing. And this story about this woman absolutely lying through her teeth for years and years and years just really struck me as like, A, doctors must deal with this all the time in the world of WebMD. They must deal with people self-diagnosing all the time, and they must deal with people thinking something's wrong when something's not wrong, or people who have this kind of needy thing that this woman clearly had, where they need something. They need someone to tell them what the problem is so that suddenly they know what the problem is, which I understand. Like, if you have a lot of issues and you don't know what it is, you want to know what it is. You don't want to have it. You want to know what it is so it can get solved. I just wanted someone to solve my intermittent, oh my golly, I had these terrible tremors in my hands. hands so that I couldn't hold a cup of tea or it would like spill all over the place. It was ridiculous. There was a lot of bad stuff going on. Apparently all vitamin deficiency. So anyway, that went away. Now I'm fine. But like, it wasn't not true. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't not true. It was happening. And the doctors who saw it were like, this is bad. They were like, here, point to this spot on the paper. And my hand would go jiggle, 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 jiggle until I could get there. And then they're like, touch your two fingers together. Like they did, the neurologist at the hospital did all these tests. Touch your finger to your nose, touch your finger to your other finger, do all these things. And I did the best I could. And he was like, yeah, you have MS. I'm like, oh no, it's horrible. That's like a death sentence. I don't want that. I want nothing to do with that. Anyway, it was very upsetting so many different ways. And I can understand if you're like, what's going on? Help me solve it. You want a diagnosis so it can get solved, but you don't want the thing to be happening. See what I mean? Whereas she wanted the thing to be happening. I don't think she actually wanted cancer. I think she wanted attention. I think she wanted that solicitous kindness and caring, and she wanted to be the center of it. She wanted people to care for her and help her and do things for her. Yeah, that's just needy. But pretending that something horrible is happening to get that attention is so sick, like really sick behavior that I can't stop thinking about it. So I highly recommend that podcast. But again, yeah, have a 12-hour road trip to go on or something, because it's a lot. And there's another whole side to it, which is that this other journalist, investigative journalist, got a tip from somebody. And this is the question that the whole thing left me with at the end. Who was tipping people off? Somebody knew she was faking and started tipping people off. They called her work. They called her husband's work. They called this investigative journalist. We don't know who it was. And they were leaving notes on the board member's car at her work. And like they got people fired, but it was like, I don't know who it was. And they never answer that question at the end, even though the whole thing is like, wait, who was the original tipster? And if you go on Reddit, you can look up all of these different answers people have. Who was the original tipster? And then a lot of the, this is so funny. People will say, who do you think it was? And then somebody will answer like, is this Amanda asking? Because she's apparently on Reddit all the time trying to find out who originally did this, as if it's their fault and not her fault for lying in the first place. So anyway, there's this investigative journalist who got a little bit obsessive about the whole thing and figured out that the photos were lies and figured out all these different things, figured out the photos were fakes. And that is another whole story, because who gets that obsessed about a real person? I might about fiction, but about a real person, and digs into all these things and asks questions of all these people? That is a fascinating story to me, too. And she's a real part of this whole investigation. Like, it wouldn't have happened. None of it would have happened. The criminal investigation, the tax fraud, the IRS people, the wire fraud. None of it would have happened if she hadn't been obsessed. And I can see getting obsessed with a great big lie and trying to figure out, like, this is clearly a lie. Like, anybody who's seen anybody go through cancer treatment knows this is a lie. But calling it out and proving it are a different matter. And it's just so interesting. So anyway, there's all these characters who are part of it. And that investigative journalist is part of it. You're like, wow, you, like, what does she get out of it proving that it's a lie? She has nothing to gain, really, from proving it's a lie. But I can see becoming committed to proving that it's a lie, right? It's so interesting to me. And making a series about it, what does that journalist get out of it? The British woman who narrates the whole thing, why? And she's all about the truth. She just wants to find the truth. She's a journalist. But she turned it into this series, which publicized the truth. And there's a mini series about it, a TV mini series. There's all this stuff. we're really fascinated why somebody would do this. And I just really think it's that ultimate betrayal of trust. And that's really fascinating. Why would someone betray trust in such a big way? It's why we're interested in grifters and other scam artists. It's so cruel. It's so cruel. We're fascinated by cruelty in general, I think. Anyway, that's a fascinating thing that I was studying this week and can't stop thinking about. Oh dear, I hope I never meet anyone like that. And it did make me think of old friends who used to tell lies just to pull people's chains. But this is much more than that. This is like lying not just to pull their chain. Like, that's not the pleasure in it, I don't think. Maybe it is. Maybe it's partly that, like, I can control people. Maybe. But I think it's partly like lying to get sympathy is the center of it, to get the sympathy, to get that attention and that affection and that caring. Yeah, I think so. It's really gross. And money does, everyone kept saying money, it's not about the money, but money seemed to be a big part of it. Even on the day to day, like getting the bills paid, it's important, but there are easier ways. I don't know, though. They seem to do pretty well with it. Ew. Gross. I would never write about someone so toxic. Never. Never, ever. What would I write about? I've been working on proofing Summerlands. That took a long time because I couldn't see. And I didn't understand. See, I'm kind of not very present in my own life. Like, I didn't understand why it was hurting my eyes so much. Why does it hurt my eyes when I look at this book? Whereas anybody with a teaspoonful of sense would go, you need better glasses. Like, oh, okay. So I got better glasses and then I proofed it. Yay. It's also hard to just sit there and keep reading something you just wrote and read and read and read and read and read. Like, I'm kind of sick of it. So I kept wanting to go do something else, but I did get it done. So I haven't been working on Becca. I haven't even been obsessing about Becca, which is weird. I did a little. I keep thinking about how to make it with those weird fantasy zone stories. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to see if it works. If it doesn't work, I can always delete it. Save as and add fantasy sequences. Because dream sequences suck. I hate it when I read something and there's a dream sequence. Because in reality, your dreams are just whatever. In fiction, it's so contrived and it's such an obvious device to get certain information out there or to do whatever. And I really don't want it to be like that. And if it comes out like that, I will not do it because that's stupid and gross and I hate it. So we'll see how that works. having someone have repeated fantasy sequences could be awful. And I'll have to see if it is. If it is, we're not doing it. But I think it could be cool. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Especially if she's, you know what's boring? Someone talking about a show you've never seen. You know what's even more boring? Someone having a fantasy sequence about a show that you've not only never seen, but doesn't exist. Like, what are we doing? That could be excruciating. And I don't mean to be negative about my own plans, but I can see a lot of ways it could be really bad. And I'm not sure it can be really good. Maybe. Maybe. The dream sequence fear is on me right now. And it's really making me reluctant to do this. Even though I want to. I'm not sure. We don't want something like that. Oh, I hate dream sequences. They're never anything but serving the plot. And they just are like, they might as well have a great big sign that says plot right over it. Like, this is a plot device. Everybody knows it's a plot device. It's never going to be anything. It's going to be something specific that the story needs to push forward. It smells like writer, as they say. It just reeks of writer. And it's such like, I don't want that. I don't like writing where you're like, oh, good, we're doing this again. Like, no, it's terrible. I hate that. So I have to see. So that's my second thoughts about the dream thing in Becca. I don't know. I do like it, but like, I like her zoning out. Maybe we just don't hear when she what she sees when she zones out. Maybe we don't see the dream sequences. She just disappears for a while and then goes off and writes something. And then we have it only in our reality. That could be better. It could be like a blank spot on the page. Maybe. Oh, maybe. I think that would honestly be better. Just really dreading the idea of these boring dreams. Nobody wants to hear anybody's dreams. I don't even want to hear my own dreams. They're just not interesting. Yeah, so that's the downside of the story I was working on. Oh no. So we can keep it, but maybe just not hear about it. There, you helped me solve something again. All right, so this is a weird episode, huh? It's about a journalistic approach to a real life thing about somebody telling a story that wasn't true. So it's about storytelling, isn't it? What if you did that whole series differently? What if you told it from a different point of view? Like, what if, because it generated outrage. That was like the way they told it was to generate outrage. That was the goal, it seemed like. Like, they're trying to get to the truth. Yes, 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 whatever, you're a journalist. But the way they got at the truth and the quotations they had from different people, the interviews they had with all the different people, and with the poor stepdaughter who was so abused by the whole thing and forced to do all this work and treated like an object and lied to constantly and is now a complete wreck. Like, she's really been harmed by this. And when you do all that, all you get is outrage. You're angry about this person treating people this way. So I wonder if there's another way to tell that story. Like, here's what untreated mental illness can do to people, which is, yeah, that's a story, all right, right there. Oh, now I want to give, oh, wait, no, I don't know if I want to do that. Maybe. It's so unsympathetic to lie like that. Oh, I want to give that to a character. Just make him a big liar. Not like Micah, who lies about everything, but people who lie about one specific thing. Isn't that funny, though, when somebody does that? When you're like, here's this person who lied about climbing Mount Everest or whatever. And you're like, did they? Why would they say that if they didn't? And they have these photos and the photos are faked. And like, see what I mean? Like, they're not getting anything out of you because of that, but it's still super annoying. Like, oh, shut up about Mount Everest, especially if they didn't go. That's a funny idea. I don't know. There's so many ideas that came out of this podcast. Anyway, it's called Scamanda. Scamanda. Her name's Amanda, and it's a scam. The title of it, all it kept making me think of was Scamander, which is what, a river in Troy or something? I don't know. Interesting title. I have writing to do, but I might finish proofing all the books I have to proof first and get them off my desk and out of my life and get everything done and gone. It's a job I hate to do. I hate proofing a novel. I get these beautiful proofs in the mail and then I have to cover them with red marks, which this time I did all left-handed. I don't know why. So they're all like scribbled all around because I was holding the book with my right hand, I guess. Switch hands! Anyway, I didn't. So they're all scribbled on now. And you take a beautiful thing and you make a mess of it, but it'll be a better beautiful thing now that it's done. Yay! All right, so that's my next job. I did start thinking about the book after Becca, just because I like to know what I'm going to do next. And I wrote a thing up on the story on the brain, but I don't know what I'm going to do. And I immediately what comes into my head is Castle Full of Trees. I have to imagine the gods. I was like, I got all baffled and like weirdly started thinking about religion that way, like, how do you imagine imminence? Like, how do you imagine somebody immanence, not imminence, like about to happen, but immanence? Like, how do you imagine a being that is beyond imagining? How do you imagine a being who is beyond the earthly, right? Like, I picture Athena when I read the Odyssey or the Iliad perfectly well. I picture Athena. There's Athena. Here she is. But if I try to imagine her in something I write, like, to me, the Greek gods, and these aren't going to be the Greek gods. That's just what, the basis of what I'm using to develop them. They're beyond. They're not of the of this earth. You can't just have regular people. They're like, they're divine. So I was sitting there trying to imagine the divine, and I was like, well, I mean, I can picture Jesus. So how come I can't picture Athena? Like, what's wrong with my brain? It was just a very odd moment trying to imagine a divine being walking around with us and then realizing, like, well, I've got this one. Why is it so hard to imagine Apollo? It's because once I see him as a person, he's not Apollo anymore. He's not divine anymore. He's just like, it's like if you cast him and suddenly you're like, oh, it's this guy. It's just a guy. He's not a deity anymore. He's just a guy. Which I realize there's a whole religion about that, but let's not worry about that right now. It should be something I've been trained my whole life to be able to do, but I have trouble with it when I'm working on the Greek gods. Put it that way. So, like, what are they like when they're in a story? I have to think really hard about how to write them, and this is what's been holding me back, honestly, with this book. I did start it once, and then I was like, Athena's there? Athena's just there. What's she doing? Do her feet touch the ground? Is she in armor? I always picture Athena in armor with that helmet on. What's she doing, though? Like, Athena's there teaching you how to fight or whatever. Apollo's there for harp lessons. Like, really? You can see how I'm struggling with this book, because the gods are there and I need them to be there and raising this child, but my dog just heaved a sigh. I know, it's boring. I just have trouble making that leap to, like, a divinity is here on earth with you, hanging out with you. What's that like? And it just imagining it somehow does something weird to my brain. It's like trying to imagine being smarter than you are. Like, you can't really do, you can imagine it, but I don't think you really know what it's like to be much smarter than you are. Like how, what's that like? Do you see things, you see connections more clearly, you see everything more clearly, you can do math in your head, unlike me, where I'm like, I started imagining writing a follow-up to Summerlands, and I was like, oh, they can hang out with everybody from Thrushcross and the Nerve, and because they're all set in right the same area and they're set in the same reality, like those towns exist. And I was like, what? So how old is Finn now? Because to me, that book, the reality of the book is in the time when I wrote it. So I wrote it in 2020. Finn was 22. How old is Finn now? And then my brain went blank because I can't figure things out in my head with math. It's dyscalculia, okay? Anyway, math. So if I were smarter, I'd be able to do that, I think. Although I don't think dyscalculia has anything to do with intelligence. Dyslexia doesn't. You can be perfectly intelligent and have dyslexia. It has nothing to do with intelligence. But anyway, if I imagined being smarter, I'd be able to do complex math in my head. Like my sister-in-law, who's a doctor, who can just, like, you can tell her somebody's birthday and she knows how old they are now instantly. Whereas I can't do the number thing. Anyway, imagining being smarter than you are and imagining a divinity walking around with you is, it's hard. Like, I keep looking over to my left, like they're over there. They're not. That's my French horn. It's hard. Anyway, it's giving me pause. So I kind of want to write that next, but I also kind of don't. And then I kind of want to write Saint Sparrow, which I can actually wrap my head around. Even though there's kind of a divinity in it, but not really. That sound is the wheels in my head spinning. So I don't know what to write next, and I have to just focus on Becca and get this dream seizure fantasy daydreaming whatever figured out so that I can actually write it more awesome than it is. It's a disability / superpower for her, and it's not cool, and she hates that it happens, but there's a good thing that comes from it. Okay, I have to think more about that, clearly, so I will get back to you next week when I've got that sorted out, and I've got the Nerve and the Worst and Summerlands all proofed and corrected and up on the site, by which I mean Amazon, in ready-to-read format. So they're not yet, but they will be. I need to talk more about The Nerve. The Nerve is a novel I absolutely adore. It's just so clear. It's like the clearest, most fun thing I've ever written. It has the best friendship in it, and it has insoluble problems and three different people who have insoluble problems that they only solve two of them, but they come to terms with the third one, and it's just my favorite. I think it's my best novel in terms of storytelling. And it's so straightforward, and it's just, I love the characters, and I love the story, and yeah, it's really my favorite. I was going to say it's really good. I think it is really good. I wouldn't tell you to read it if it wasn't, has some proofing to be done. Who knows what errors are in it, though I think I was better at proofreading back in the day when I wrote it, 2019. Goodness, things take a while. All right, so that's that. I'm doing my work as best I can, and not lying, I hope. lying. What's it about? Really, what's it about? Like, really? Powerlessness? I think. Trying to exercise mean little power over somebody? It's a sickness, I think. I don't know. Why do people lie like that? Anyway, if you know, send me an email at sacredcheesepodcast@gmail.com. You should see the wind whipping these 50-foot white pines around. It's absolutely terrifying. Send me an email, anyway, at that email address, and I will try to figure it out with you. I don't know why people lie. I do think there is a real problem, and I don't know if it's cultural or human nature, in trying to get away with things. Getting away with things is huge. I know a lot of students do it. They do it because it feels powerful to get away with something you're not supposed to do. And I wonder if it just comes down to that. And I think that's one of the ugliest parts of human nature, and we need to quit it. Stop trying to get away with things. Stop it. I think our entire current government is about that. Like, all of our government crises are people who are trying to get away with things. They love getting away with things. And it's a whole culture of it. And it's just so ugly, and it has to stop. I don't know if it's gonna, though. Lying. Gotta figure it out. All right. Thank you so much. This has been another exciting episode of, you know, Sacred Cheese of Life. Bye.